Hey, 3DMJers, this is Andrea Valdez, and you're listening to the 3D Muscle Journey podcast. Today, you'll be hearing Alberto Nunez, Brad Loomis, and Nick Licamelli talk about continued training progress. For most people in the gym, the only progress worth measuring is more weight lifted, big changes in body weight, or huge visual changes in the physique. But the guys are not only going to debunk that narrow but common point of view, they're going to explain and expand on what real progress means. You'll hear the ways they incorporate volume changes, rep schemes, RPE, movement patterns, exercise selection, load placement, and a whole lot of other variables to measure and ensure long-term gains across a full lifting career. This episode will leave you with so many new tools in your toolbox, and it's definitely going to be an asset to replay and revisit anytime you feel like things are stalling or plateauing for yourself or your athletes. As always, if you have any feedback or comments on this episode, go to 3dmusclejourney.com or to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/team3dmj and leave it under podcast number 167. So let's get into it. Here is How to Keep Progressing with Brad Loomis, Nick Licamelli, and Alberto Nunez.
Nick, when you think about progressing, what's your way of doing business there? What's kind of your go-to?
Yeah, so I like to look at it. I guess we have to define what exactly it is and what we're talking about. So is this progression like in the short term? Is it progression over a career? I think that's going to have all different answers. You know, there's obviously there's a lot of ways to measure progress. We could look at weight on the bar. We could look at our physique. We could take different, you know, measurements like that. I guess it really depends on the duration that we're talking about, and then what the actual goal is, and how we define progression. Those are kind of my initial thoughts. Very general, but I think we're going to kind of dive into a couple of those things here as this conversation goes on.
Yeah, for sure. Because that's an excellent point. I remember when I very, very first started lifting weights, right back in the YMCA in Little Klamath Falls, Oregon, right? And I remember I was embarrassed to bench press with the bar and 25-pound plates on each side. I could only do that like five times, and I hated it. I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm going to go over there to the Nautilus machine, and I'm going to go to start there. And I remember it was like every freaking week I could put more weight on the machine. I could move that pin down, you know. And it seemed like it was a matter of like 3 or 4 weeks, you know, doing bench press like twice a week. I was doing the whole stack. And then I felt good enough to go to the bar because I could at least use the 35s for I think it was like 8 reps or something like that. But I just remember it felt amazing. It's like, wow, this 110 pounds on this stack was something that I could do 8 times, and now I'm repping it 12 times and I'm going down 2 more plates, you know? And it was just amazing, you know? And it's at the time I had no idea what was going on. I was getting stronger. I knew that. And I was just going with it, you know? So yeah, in that kind of a scheme, weekly, every other workout, you know, progress is happening. So then it got a little bit more tricky, right? So that's where I think we should throw it over our good man, Alberto. What do you do when it starts getting tricky?
Oh, well, I guess now the way I would define progressive overload is when you get to the point that you need more excite the body to you know, drive adaptation, right? It's like, you know, when you got to into that stack, right, it was good, but if you just stayed there, you know, at a certain point you wouldn't be getting the training response you want, right? So you have to keep moving up and you have to keep pushing. And I think we all kind of, like you did, inherently know this when we first step into the gym, right? It's like the point is to get in there and like, hey, get a little better and lift a little bit more. And I think almost right away, like when we get in there, we're kind of hungry for that. So I guess that's the way we view it now. And it does get trickier because, like, for example, right now, like over 20 years of training, and it's like, okay, I still want to get better. And there's a lot of things, I guess, that I'm balancing when I'm trying to, accumulate enough stimulus in order to get the hypertrophic response that I want. So you just keep doing the same. Let's just say you just kept doing the same workout over and over for like months. You probably wouldn't be growing past a certain point. You wouldn't be getting any better. So, I guess at the start, it's as simple as progressive overload. For me, when I first started training, was, can I make it to the gym 3 times a week? You know, right? So for some people, that's exactly what that is, you know? I think for you know, us here and everyone listening, it gets a little trickier. And this is where we, I guess, have to start to dive into the, like, using the football analogy, the X's and O's. Like, we have to beef up our playbook in order to get there in a safer, more predictable manner.
One of the things that I've actually gone through my own journey is finding my identity and kind of defining my own goals. So when I started out, didn't really have a goal. I just wanted to lift more weight. I wanted to get bigger. I wanted to look better. And it's kind of this mishmash of like all these different goals lumped into one. And then once I kind of matured a little bit and realized that bodybuilding and physique sport, that was more of my goal than the weight on the bar, then I realized, okay, I almost did like a control alt delete to my training. And all of a sudden I realized, okay, I get way lower into a Romanian deadlift with 135 than the weight that I've been doing. Like, yeah, I've been pulling some heavy weight, but let's get a little bit more of a stretch here, drop the weight, and just build up back from there. And I've done that at least 2 or 3 times within my entire career, where you just kind of like take a look in the mirror and say, you know what, I'm progressing the weight, I'm feeling good, but I want to just kind of double check my form, make sure I'm getting that deep stretch in all these exercises. And honestly, that came with experience, but it also came with following the right people. And sometimes when you're getting into this, you have images of muscle magazines or Ronnie Coleman videos, and you don't see Jeff Albert's training in his garage where that last rep looks just like the first rep. And you don't see these guys that just kind of like close their eyes and live within like the discomfort and just kind of, just kind of get in their own heads. And it's almost like a meditative, meditation, like when they're training. That really has been a game changer for me. And I really, at this point in my training, I always remember to keep the goal in mind, and that helps kind of set that foundation for progress. Because if we're progressing, but you're not progressing toward your goal, or if my goal is hypertrophy and I'm cutting my Romanian deadlift short for the sake of load, to me that doesn't feel right. So it's always important to remember the goal and not be blinded by, you know, an article that you read about progressive overload or a podcast or anything. Make sure that you have your goals in mind, define what your progress is, and then kind of build off of that.
Well, you know, what you just said, actually, this I started off like with a sound idea of what I was there to do, which is I want to get to the end of the dumbbell rack, all the plates. I want more reps. But then eventually at a certain point, it's like you find yourself in that the dark web of bodybuilding. I know I did. And it became like, I remember there was a point where my goal was literally to go in there and, I guess, endure more pain and brutalize myself more than the last time. That was strictly it. Like, and I'd be disappointed if I'm like, man, you wussed out on that Widowmaker. Like, you did too many breaths in between a few of those reps, or you could have taken a bit more of a, you know, some more of that burn. And you know, I think it had its place. It was, you know, it was kind of like the boot camp for bodybuilding. But at a certain point, I just remember taking a step back and totally wrecked at this point. And I'm like, you know what? My physique was making the most changes when I was like, if my bench press moved up by, you know, 20 pounds in 3 reps, my chest followed along with it, you know, and what I'm doing now is just making things so unpredictable. I hurt all the time. It was fun. It was great while it lasted, but at a certain point, you kind of connect the dots and you're like, oh, okay, okay. So, you know, at the end, it's about, I guess, your profit margin. Are you adding, you know, I guess, yeah, it, you know, those variables, the reps, the weight, the form improving, like you mentioned, Nick. So there's many ways to I guess, crack that code for sure. But I think, yeah, most all of us here kind of come from that generation where that's kind of how we did it for a minute. It was, you know, going in there and basically wrecking yourself.
Yeah. And with that being said, Bert, I mean, let's face it, you know, especially you and I, we're not exactly young chickens in the gym anymore, you know, and it seems, at least to me, like you've kind of cracked the code here a little bit. You know, it you just posted up a great video. It seems like you keep getting bigger when really it doesn't seem like you should. You know, you've gotten those, what, couple of decades under your belt, but yet you seem to keep on trucking, keep on getting bigger. You know, I don't want to.
Brad, you over here almost 50 with a rib sticking out when you squat, and you're giving me crap, man. You know, coming out the bone. This man don't stop. Thank you, man.
But yeah, no, in all seriousness, I mean, what do you think that your secret is for you? You know, and you might give a little bit of context there too, you know, how you kind of tend to respond pretty darn well, you know, to kind of a nice dose of volume, but at the same time, you can break yourself, and you have done that before. But how have you unlocked that code?
I think it's a combination of, I guess, you know what, because like, to kind of get rolling on what we are trying to do with this one is, just over the years, it's like I've gathered data on myself, you know, I've beefed up the playbook, and then I also have the benefit of working with other folks and trying things with other people. So, you know, it's like, hey, American football, right? Like there's like all these plays. It's like, hey, let's run this one, right? Same dealio with bodybuilding, you know, like the playbook's pretty big. Sometimes it can be hard to trust it, especially when you're not feeling great, you're kind of in a drought, but it's cliche, trust the process, or at least like run the process. It's whole way through and then see what worked well and what didn't. And so again, it goes back to just that, gathering data, like fine tuning things. Sometimes you have to let go of things that you're like, man, I thought that was it, but it really isn't. So yeah, it goes back to, I think, beefing up the playbook and just being hyper aware when it comes to context, right? Because that's context is everything. Right. So yeah, it comes down to that basically. Just years of experience with myself, training other folks, and yeah, just being aware of what's going on in that moment.
Gotcha. So yeah, I'm trying to visualize it. When you say beef up the playbook, not necessarily program hopping, but are you talking like mixing and matching things, knowing that this works for this body part, so I'm going to do this type of progression, this type of volume, and you know that this works? Because like with you, it always seems like your lower body responds to just about anything. You just kill them, and they don't die, you know? So maybe do you use this type of progression and this type of system, this play for the lower body? Is that kind of what you're talking about, is meshing like all these different plays together into whatever it is that you're doing a particular block?
So I think the first layer for most people is... I think the whole like sets per week range has been like, it's been great that everyone's kind of been on the same page with that. Like the 10 to 20 sets.
Yeah. That's been a game breaker
for everyone. Right. Because you know, when you get those really go hard athletes, whether it's a chick that just like wants to grow her glutes or some dude that he's like, hey, I want to get like my pro card at some point. Often they're doing like too much. Like that's the issue, right? So usually just raking people into that area, like that's a huge one. And I think one that actually I probably should have said before that is just exercise technique. I'm sure Nick and, I'm not sure. We'll see if he agrees, but as you learn more about, biomechanics, right? Like, it's probably you go back to what you're doing in the gym, like, ah, okay, so maybe that upright row to my chin isn't like the best way to go about it. So honestly, I think above anything else, like you could have someone on a kind of crappy program that's lacking a few things, but if technique is right and they're moving the way they should, that in itself often can be like a huge way to just make the stimulus like that much more potent for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that also is a huge, huge component in longevity in this game is learning, you know, the movement patterns that work for you. And maybe there's not a good or bad exercise, but there is a damn good or bad exercise for you personally. Everyone has that movement that they know that you just think about doing and like your shoulder pinches, or like you think about doing it and like your hip pinches or something, right? Or your back hurts. We need to kind of get the message across that it's not really a bad exercise. It's just maybe not for you at this time. So I could say that for me, the overhead dumbbell press, for some reason, gets my shoulder every time. So I moved to a landmine press. I haven't looked back. Like I could probably do them, but I haven't needed to look back. Like I just do my landmine presses and then we're good to go. So yeah, definitely. I think once we build in that foundation of like those exercises that we know that we can kind of cycle through, not that we have to avoid, but just know that if we're going to try to add those back in, you know, tiptoe around it and just kind of feel it out before we just kind of go in there and don't get discouraged. Like if you're not progressing or you're not increasing your load or sets or what have you on a certain exercise, and if it's pain that's holding you back, that's a whole different animal than if it's, you know, you're just not progressing and you're just doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, that's a great point. Cause I know, at least for me anecdotally, a big chink in my armor in my early bodybuilding career is my back. I mean, I had like no lats, you know, I could get shredded. I could kind of somewhat pose them, but it was definitely my weak link, you know? And I just kind of remember thinking at the time, how is it that I can't develop my back? I'm doing barbell rows and I progressed from, you know, 115 pounds all the way up to shit. I think at one point I was like doing 270 pounds, you know, how is it that I've progressed all this time and I still am not seeing the development in my lats, you know, that I want. And it for whatever reason or another, it's got away from doing barbell rows. I can't even remember why, but one thing I can say is that it doesn't matter if it's I return to it now and then do it for a while, or if I just randomly do it on some given week, I suck at barbell rows. I can't, it's like I can't use my back. I use too much momentum. I kind of look like I'm trying to do a half clean, you know, with the bar. And then, you know, I just kind of came to the conclusion barbell rows are probably a great exercise for a lot of people, you know. Bert did heavy barbell rows kind of in a semi-clean fashion for a long time, and he's arguably got a great back, you know? But for me, I don't know why. I mean, it feels okay. I don't feel like a monkey humping a football or anything, but at the same time, I just suck at doing barbell rows. I went ahead and I started doing something that I've never really done before, and I've done it for like a year and a half now. I started doing just like a straight arm pull down, or like some people would call it a pullover, you know, if you do it supine. I would introduce those here and there in the past in my training, but I never did it consistently. I would do it for like a block and then I get away from it, you know? But now that I've been doing it for like a good solid couple of years and incorporating some quote unquote intensity techniques, even though that's not the true version of intensity, but doing mile rep sets, you know, and pushing close to failure with short rest between clusters and things like that. I'll be damned if my lats don't feel like they're growing. I can get a pump in my lats, which I have never really gotten before. And the progress is really, really slow because it's basically an isolation exercise. But sure as shit, I'm kind of finding on these mile rep sets that I'm doing, I'm getting a few more reps here and there. You know, I'm taking every set basically to either failure or I'm tapping out from the burn, but I'm getting a few more repetitions. And who knows, maybe I'll be able to graduate from that green band, you know, to kind of that black band eventually, you know. But that's a great point that there's not maybe good or bad exercises per se. A lot of people, including Berto, can do great with bent over barbell rows. I can't do it, you know. I kind of exhausted the progressive overload fashion, went to something that worked better for me. Like you said, Nick, hit Control-Alt-Delete, started over again, progression's happening again, kind of in a more subtle fashion.
So sometimes progressive overload is just, I guess, building a foundation of movements that basically like sweeps the whole floor, you know, like narrowing it down. That might take a few years. It might take a few years to finally get to the point where it's like, oh, okay, so all these movements here, they cover all my needs. Mm-hmm. They don't hurt me. And I can progress quite comfortably in them. So, yeah, that's another way of progressing. And that might take 5 years for someone to figure out. That, mm-hmm. you know, like, okay, I used to, I don't know, squat maybe because I felt like I needed to do it. But holy crap, I'm like, I'm 5'11 with super long femurs. And I just keep hurting my back once I get to a certain point. And, you know, which is a quite a typical one. But yeah, excellent point. Sometimes just figuring out what are your tools in regards to exercises, I think that's a huge aha moment. And just that mm-hmm. itself will unlock some progress, absolutely.
Do you guys think exercise, like the choice of exercise can be a way to progress? So in other words, like say the goal is a barbell back squat. Maybe we start with like a goblet squat if it's a newcomer to the gym, and then, or maybe we start with a hack squat and then go to a goblet squat and then go to maybe a front squat. And then maybe, do you think maybe that's like another type of way to progress, like just changing the complexity of the exercise?
Yeah, good question. I mean, that's kind of like what I did when I very, very first started, right? I was embarrassed to use the barbell, so I started on the Nautilus machine, maxed that out, then jumped over to the barbell bench press, right? So yeah, I think that a system like that is probably a way to progress. Right there, you're kind of talking about, you could progress for like a year. Like you just said, going from a goblet squat to a dumbbell front squat, to a barbell front squat, to a high bar back squat, you know? Yeah, you're talking about years possibly of progression there. I think the tricky thing is when we get into that program hopping, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you don't necessarily want to like progress and then not look back. But at the same time, I think if you do that, you still want to kind of incorporate a bit of what is working. Like if you've progressed to heck, a safety bar squat, right? I don't think there's anything wrong with going back to a goblet squat. Maybe you can do goblet squats in a hypertrophy rep range or using myo reps or whatever. But I kind of feel like you don't want to abandon that safety bar squat either, or at least what has already kind of gotten you there, you know? Because yeah, there is kind of a form of progression in there. If you can make that goblet squat progress, and then maybe your safety bar squat has kind of been topped out and progression is super slow there, you know, and you got to follow kind of these really slow going, meticulous triple progression plans. You can maybe get in between those progression jumps doing your goblet squat or something like that in a higher rep range or however you want to go about doing it. So that's the first thing that kind of comes to my mind, you know, when you kind of talk about that kind of progression. But Alberto's nodding his head. I know he's got a lot to say about this too.
the one thing I did want to add to that was, in that hypothetical situation, we're talking about if that barbell back squat was the goal for some reason, because we also don't want, just thinking about it now, we don't want people thinking like, well, I'm progressing my hack squat great. Like, do I have to mm-hmm. now progress to a back squat, a barbell squat? Like, am I holding myself back because I'm not under the bar? Like, every muscle magazine that I've read said the squat is the king of all exercises. Mm-hmm. So it's important to remember that if the goal is not to barbell back squat, the barbell back squat should not be the goal. You know, we can progress with a goblet squat pretty damn well. We could progress with mm-hmm. split squats and hack squats. And so again, all coming back to what that goal is and then how we define progress, because if we don't know what the target is, you know, what are we going to, we don't know if we're hitting it or what to even aim at.
Yeah. Yeah. Good context. Yeah.
What's going on, 3DMJers? Eric Helms here. Thanks for listening to our podcast. I just want to take a second to tell you about MASS, Monthly Applications in Strength Sport. This is a monthly research review that I put out with Greg Knuckles, Dr. Mike Zerdos, and Dr. Eric Trexler. We cover the most up-to-date, peer-reviewed research in the world of strength and physique sport that's directly relevant to your practice as a coach or an athlete. We provide our reviews in written format, but also, since you enjoy our podcast, in audio roundtable reviews where we discuss the research in depth. Finally, we also do video concept reviews where we cover a broader topic in video format for your learning. For fitness professionals, you can take quizzes on mass content and earn continuing education credits for most of the biggest certifying bodies in the fitness industry. If you want to sign up and get a subscription, head over to 3DMuscleJourney.com and click on the products tab. Thanks for your time and thanks for listening.
So let's just say we have our exercises in order. We're using roughly an amount of volume that the individual requires. The technique is pretty spot on. We're doing all those things right. I guess what are some other variables like past that we can play with? That's a hard case, and a lot of people getting smarter. They come to us, and you're like, "Man, this is all reasonable, right?"
Yeah, yeah, and that's really a lot of times is the ultimate question, and kind of where we need to really pull like all of our theories, evidence, etc., tie it together to come up with a game plan. Earlier this week on Instagram, we posted up this square that says nobody can get bigger and stronger forever. Everybody has their genetic limit. And I was definitely feeling that because it's kind of like, man, is this it for Brad? Is progression kind of something that is kind of out the window? And while it wouldn't break my heart, I'm still going to train because I enjoy training. I enjoy just randomly being able to squat 400 pounds, even though I've done it a million times before. I just want to do it. It feels good, and I'm going to keep doing it forever. But that's, how do I keep doing that when you've met that genetic limit? Have I met that genetic limit? Maybe I just haven't found the right progression, So yeah, I think that's the big question that you asked there, Bert. I think we need to spitball just tons of ideas that we've done on ourselves, what evidence kind of shows, what we've done with clients,
You know, what's the first place I go to with this one today because of modern times? It's just all the stuff outside of the gym. Because when I first started bodybuilding, everyone Tupperware, just all over the house, right? What's he doing Friday night? He's going to bed at 8 p.m., but now a combination of super addicting cell phones, there's more leeway as we've removed some of the more unnecessary rules when it comes to how you should eat. Quite often, I never thought I'd say it, but the answer is just the stuff outside of the gym. It can sometimes be the roadblock that is preventing you from, progressing the way you should. And I know because I catch myself with this. I will be hitting a rough spot and I'm like, all right, let me backtrack the last 10 days. Let's go over the sleep. Let's go over the food. Did you get up and get that last meal of the day in when, you could have? Little things like that. So, I think that's the big issue and something to look at when, you think the other things are pretty well laid out. Have you guys noticed that with kids these days, I guess?
Nick's the young one here. I'm going to go ahead and let him go.
Yeah. So for my story, I'm still very much at the beginning of approaching this thing with a level head and because we're talking first stumbling upon 3DMJ, 3-4 years ago. So I remember those days very much. And you really want to talk about those days, we'll get my wife on the podcast. And she dated me for a very long time before we got married. The most progress I've made in my career, professionally and in bodybuilding, has been outside of those things, has been just being Nick and finding Nick. And one of my, I guess, greatest strengths, but also greatest weaknesses, like a lot of us that get into this, is that we know how to go hard. We just know how to go there. It doesn't matter. It's not even a thing. It's good. We're going to do it. This is it. It's a blessing and it's a curse. It's almost in the wrong hands, that could be dangerous. And the progress I've made outside of the gym and outside of my career has been some of the progress that I'm most proud of. Like you're saying, I used to, very recently, I still have Tupperware that doesn't get used anymore, but it's still in my cabinet. Mm-hmm. You know, the anxiety of being somewhere and not getting your meal in, or the attitude to give to people for no reason, you know, that has all changed. My last prep, and I know Eric and all of us have kind of talked about this, but my last prep that I did, no one around me knew I was doing it. Not a soul knew I was doing it, except my father at a family party looked at me and said, "You losing weight again?" And this was like a couple months into my prep. And I was like, yeah, maybe, I don't know. Cause it's a touchy subject when they watch you go through one, and your loved ones watch you go through one prep, and then you come out of it, and then you're, you know, going through it again. But yeah, my most recent prep, I didn't, you know, other than being really cold and feeling physically drained and everything else that comes with prep, I was able to, you know, kind of exist as a normal person and maybe even make my life more organized and more focused on things. And so, yeah, the progress outside the gym, that's the hardest, the most important, and probably the most underrated.
Well, you know what? That kind of went in a slightly different direction, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I was saying these kids need to do more what you were doing when you were kind of like just,
oh,
you know, but for some people that is also the answer, because I've been there before too, where, you know, young adult, and I'm like, man, how am I going to be an adult with this bodybuilding thing going on? Like, you know, like, how am I going to like hold a job? I'm supposed to, you know, like eventually get married, have kids. Like, I have to eat every 2 hours, man. Right. So for some people, it's like legitimately like getting rid of some of the extra is what they need. Like making it, like all you can really do is have a sound plan. I think that's one of the benefits in coaching, is like have a sound plan. Like someone else took care of that. They're doing all the number crunching for you. It's like, all right, as long as you do this, just be you and do the rest of the things that you need to do. And yeah, once I kind of got that solved a little bit more, and I was just I was no longer a better bodybuilder at the expense of the person, right? I think that's when things definitely took, they definitely took a little spurt in the right direction when it came to my progress, because I was happier doing this. It wouldn't bring as much conflict to my life. So, yeah, that's super important. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I say it's still the majority of people who are really about this, like that is like one of their biggest issues, and it's just not like a good time and often not necessary.
Yeah. I think bringing up those two different kinds of people who you met originally and then who I kind of brought up, I guess, if we had to, give like, a progression, I guess, outline for, say, like a person who, like we all were, how do you tell someone to not do excessive volume? Okay, how do we cut it back, and then how do we start to progress again? How do we take someone who's not doing enough and push them, and then how do we take someone who has been training for 20 years and has reached a plateau? Where do we take that person? Is it different? Is it the same? Are the principles the same? Like, what does that look like in those situations?
Yeah, that last one is definitely the hardest one, right? And sometimes, speaking specifically for that latter one, sometimes I feel like you just have to almost try the thing that you're afraid of. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes we just have to say, look, let's just drop this volume back. Let's just drop this volume back. What's the worst that's going to happen? 4 weeks later, we bring it back up again, right? But let's drop this volume back. Let's maybe make things a little bit more livable. Make it so that you can actually get all your training in and not stress over missing this workout or this session or this particular exercise or what have you, you know? And then while we're doing that, kind of like you said, Nick, hitting that control alt delete, maybe let's just kind of evaluate things a little bit. Let's get a look at these movements. You know, are you really pushing as hard as you say you are? Maybe you're pushing 5 good reps and then you're slopping out another 10. 14 repetitions, but 10 of them were junk. You know what I mean? Let's kind of do an audit of these things while we're kind of testing out this quote-unquote lower volume approach, you know. And then, of course, that right there is going to yield kind of a host of answers that you can then program from. A lot of those reps are junk. We need to just clean things up here a little bit. All the volume that we lost by cutting it back, we're going to pick up again by getting 12 good reps and 2 junk reps instead of 4 good reps and 10 junk reps, you know. Sometimes everything's good. Sometimes everything is good. You know, the rep quality is good. You know, now things are getting a little bit more doable. Now maybe we can progress from here by adding a set, doing some sort of a progression scheme, double progression, triple progression, whatever. Sometimes it's not even necessarily a program progression. Let's just see what the RPE is on all these things that we have programmed. Do that for 4 weeks, see if the RPE comes down after 4 weeks, you know. I think that is one of a few answers for that really hard person. But I think, you know, in a nutshell, don't be afraid to do something that maybe you've been afraid to do. At least try it, you know, because what's the worst that's going to happen? You've already done this for 20, 25 years. This next block is like a blink of an eye, you know. But yeah, you can use, it doesn't have to be like an either or spectrum, you know what I mean? Some of these things you can use almost at any time in a person's bodybuilding career, you know? Oh, you go hard? Okay, let's look at these repetitions. Let's see how many actual working sets you're getting versus what we recommend, you know? Sure, you've got 30 sets programmed. There's only about 8 that are actually working, you know? And then likewise, you know, okay, yeah, you're doing 25 good hard sets. Let's try making that about 18. Maybe we make it a little bit heavier. Maybe we make the RPE a little bit higher, you know, kind of something like that. So yeah, I think that we can pick and choose a lot of different things, and it all comes down to, like we talked about, your athletic identity, you know? What is that for a particular person? Like you said with you, Nick, you know, I'm the exact opposite. With me, shit, put more load on the bar, you know? Let's keep those reps consistent. Is this RPE lower this week with this load than it was last week? Is it going to be easier 3 weeks from now than it is this week, you know? So, yeah, I think any of those things are really kind of useful regardless of the position a person's in their bodybuilding career.
You know, you mentioned something there that I think is confusing to people, and I think I've just seen this. I've seen this very frequently, where you know they hear about the progressive overload, and they're going to start doing the progressive overload, and they get to the point where they're. I don't say it like that. We say it to mock the fact that it's sometimes just not understood all the way. But say so this is people kind of like pin themselves in this position where you know because they're aiming to do the progressive overload. They are under the false assumption that now every workout has to be pretty linear, that they always have to be progressing, and if not, something's terribly wrong, right? So, I think here's a good example of why that's not necessarily the case, and why, like, especially the more well trained you are, the longer you can kind of hang on to similar amounts of stimulus before you have to adjust anything. So a good example of this is like, let's just say this person can deadlift 400 pounds for 5 reps, and they're just doing it for sets of 2, right? And let's just say that's all they could do for a year, right? Like super hypothetical, like no one really does it that way. But like in there, like if you imagine yourself in that position, it's like eventually it would go from an RPE 7 if you're doing it for 2 reps, right? Maybe they're doing 3 sets and by the end it was an RPE 8. Like it would keep moving up. Like eventually, like 4 months down the road, it would be, I don't know, like an RPE 5 on the last one. And then it'd get to the point where it's like a year into this and it would be like RPE nothing to them. Like they couldn't even tell you. And of course, yes, some of that is neurological, but at the same time, some of that that's going to tag along is going to be muscular as well. But But yeah, it just kind of goes to show you, it's like a very similar amount of stimulus can work for a while. You just don't want to find yourself being that guy where 4 or 5 months down the road, you're like, man, I'm kind of still lifting the same weight. It's like, that is when it becomes an issue. And I think we have to, I guess, make that time scale quite explicit to people, because again, people pressure themselves into feeling like they have to progress all the time, when in reality, some of the most consistent guys I know, like Jeff Alberts, will kind of hang on to like very similar sequences for many months. And it's not until you step back like 9 months, a year, that you're like, oh, wow, he's added, you know, a bit here and there. So yeah, it doesn't mean workout to workout. It just means over the course of time and, you know, how long that takes. Well, again, context matters there. Again, it's like, okay, where are you in regards to how well-trained you are? How close are you to your ceiling? Genetics, things like that.
One of the things that I find with the athletes that I work with pain and injury is, so we talked about all these different ways to look at progress. And if a lot of the athletes out there are focused on weight on the bar or sets and reps, they may miss the nuances of progress that they're actually making. That's a conversation I have a lot, is I'll have someone who has, you know, let's say 4 out of 10 pain in their knee on day one, and they can go up 2 steps, but then it gets to an 8 out of 10 and then they have to stop. Well, maybe in 4 weeks, they still have a 4 out of 10 pain in their knee, but they walk up 3 flights of stairs. Well, then if their goal is to be pain-free, just like our athlete whose goal is to increase weight on the bar only, they're going to miss the fact that they just made all of those gains, all that progress. So it's my job to kind of point that out and say, I get it. You're still feeling that pain, but look at all this great stuff that you're doing and that we've done. So I think sometimes that's where our biggest role can be, is just bringing light to those things. And I think, like Brad, you were talking before, I think it comes down to building a trusting relationship so that we can have those conversations. Because Brad, like you said, if you want someone, especially with the mindset of a strength and physique athlete, if you want them to try things that they've never done before and stray from their program, you better have some trust built up, because they're not going to do that easily. So like everything that we do when we work with athletes or clients or patients, that trust is number one. And then sometimes progress is just a matter of us pointing out all the great progress. On the other side, sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes people, it's like that meme where like the guy's like 16th place and he's like biting the metal and shaking the champagne. Sometimes it's like, look, maybe we need to start like, yeah, you're feeling good and you're lifting good, but don't you think we should have increased weight in the past maybe couple months of this lift, and maybe we could start implementing some of this? So as we're going through this conversation, I'm just realizing that there's so many different types of athletes that we would approach so differently. And I guess that it all comes down to knowing the athlete, knowing yourself, and kind of going from there. It's kind of like murkier than I thought when we first started this conversation.
yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think one thing that kind of came to mind as you were talking there is that sometimes we have to kind of, because really kind of what it boils down to is we've talked about a lot of different ways to achieve progress, right? We've talked about a lot of different ways that we can kind of define progress without necessarily having it be progressive overload, you know? And sometimes what it kind of boils down to is you have to kind of like sacrifice one form of progression in order to progress in another way. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like that linear progression where we're going up in load. Sometimes we do have to kind of sacrifice a rep or two, you know, and it's all for the greater good of getting stronger, you know? And kind of like we said, when it comes to the nuance of lifting, sometimes you have to sacrifice a little bit of load in order to get a greater range of motion, you know? Sometimes we do have to sacrifice a little bit of load in order to get more repetitions, in order to get more volume, whether it be sets or reps, right? And so I think that my point is that progressive overload is not necessarily a one-size-fits-all approach, you know? And sometimes you do have to sacrifice progress in one avenue in order to get progress in another avenue, in which case we've just kind of defined another form of progress, right? Progressing this way, sacrificing this one. But then the one we sacrificed on, now we focus on progressing there and maybe sacrificing what we were progressing on elsewhere. Hence, hitting Control-Alt-Delete every time that we kind of find this, or not even find, but revisit maybe, like Bert said, this is a playbook that we've used, and this play works every freaking time. We get a first down when we need 5 yards every freaking time. Well, now it's kind of time to say, okay, this has worked before. Let's revisit that play now. Run that. We know that this play has kind of worked before. Run that. And then all the while, it gets fun when you mix and match all those different things with different body parts and different lifts and, you know, kind of stuff like that.
There's so many metrics. Like, even I had an athlete a few years back where we were, when it came to gym time, like we had 60 minutes. So, and they also happened to be pretty trigger happy about progressions. Like, they just, I'm like, you're trying to make improvements that far exceed our ability to adapt, right? And what I ended up doing was I wrote down the whole program. Like, this is what we're doing, and you're not changing a thing. You're repeating these like sequences, even if it's a terrific day. Easiest program I've ever written, because literally this is what we're doing too for 5 weeks. And one of the metrics that kind of snuck out, it was like evidence that we were progressing, was the fact that, hey, like when we first started, I literally had 5 minutes like left on my time. And now, because that 5x5 on the hack squat was absolutely crushing me, and I needed to just really take my time between sets. And now it's kind of like child's play. Now I'm done, and I'm done with 15 minutes left. So that in itself is evidence that they can do more now. So there's so many ways. And I think quite often, once people like this person, once they get to, and they're an avid listener, so hey, I called you out, bro. But when they get into the whole like, okay, I see the importance of you know, my training having a progressive component to it, is that there's a rate at which we wish we could adapt and progress at, and then there's like the actual reality. And sometimes like those things, like that they don't match up, and kind of, and like weigh-ins, they tend to fluctuate, and that can sometimes skew perception of what is actually going on. But yeah, in regards to the metrics and like what is evidence of progression, like Nick mentioned, sometimes like for me, it's like, yo, I've been squatting for 4 months now with like out any pain in this area. Like that's a win in itself. Mm-hmm. So there's, yeah. And you can miss out on those details, I think, when you're super hardworking and ambitious and serious about your progress.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because like sometimes, say somebody is doing a 5x5 on their hack squat, and when they first started, at the end of a block of doing that, their back was killing them, or their knees were killing them, or something like that. And without any progression plan at all, it's okay, we're just going to let you deload, we're going to rest for 10 days, whatever, we're going to start again. Pretty soon, they finish that block up, same metrics, same, you know, rep scheme, set scheme, everything, now that there's not as much pain there. You know, now I can actually get through a block, you know, without actually having pain, you know, and maybe now I can progress a little bit. But it's kind of like dieting, you know. If you're in a deficit, if you're in a true deficit, I don't care if you stalled for 8 weeks, you're eventually going to lose weight, you know. The end result of true starvation is death. It's just going to take a while, you know? And I think that's kind of the important thing when we talk about weight training, you know? As long as you're weight training and you are sticking to your program, adhering to the principles of whatever it is that you're doing, progress is going to be made. It might take a while. You might have to be patient. But good chances you're going to miss all of these little things that we've talked about here that are signs of progression. I can get up 3 flights of stairs and my knee pain is still 4 out of 10, you know. I can keep up with this program, and I can get it done now in 50 minutes as opposed to 65 minutes. I feel pain after a block of training, and now I don't. These are all signs of progression when you didn't even necessarily even plan for it.
When I just first bumped my training to 5 days a week, and I added a little, no, actually didn't add volume, but I just spread it out to 5 days a week. I remember I just felt like fevery enough. I was just like, I have only 2 rest days. And like 6 weeks later, I'm like, oh, okay, like this is actually, this feels good. But it took a while. So yeah, there's so many angles and again, so many moving parts. And that's why it can be hard to give yourself enough credit for the progress that you are making. What if someone's not progressing? Like, what are some of, like, they're literally doing most everything right. You know, what are some of your favorite, I guess, reset, control, alt, delete ways of fixing that?
I mean, deload would be my probably number one go-to, right? Yeah, taking a deload. And the thing with anything is the more that you learn, the more comfortable you are trying it. And once, I mean, the quarantine comeback series that I did, it is all about taking time off from training, taking time completely off from training, not shaving a set and some RPE off of a week to deload. We're talking about bed rest for weeks and weeks, and still you maintain your muscle mass and your strength. So why not throw in a deload week? Why not do that to kind of recalibrate? And obviously, if we don't know that information, if we don't know that evidence is out there, it's scary. It's like, I'm pull back on training. Like, I'm sorry, I do not understand what the words coming out of your mouth. but I think once knowledge truly is power, and the more that we learn about this stuff, and the more that we realize what a deload is, what a deload isn't, I think that just kind of opens the door to that. Another kind of way to go about this would be to maybe change up like your particular phase. So if you're going through a strength training block and it's just kind of hitting a wall, or you have some pain, go into more of a technique block where you drop the weight, focus on your technique, or more of a hypertrophy block where maybe you're stepping away from the big three and you're using some leg extension, leg curls and isolation movements and things like that. It's almost like a deload from what you're doing, but it's just kind of shifting lanes a little bit. So you can keep that intensity up, because just like pain, when you try to find what's causing the pain and what's that sensitive factor, whether it's load, RPE, intensity, you know, overall volume, whether it's exercise selection, sometimes that could be the reason why you're hitting that wall. So if you can just change it up a little bit, you may not need to deload. You may not need to, you know, do something like that. Maybe you just switch up your training a little bit and, you know, and kind of see where that takes you.
And that's a great point, because, you know, bodybuilders kind of tend to like hang with clicks. It's like you have your pumpers and then you have your go heavy or go home guys. And quite often, like, you know, we know who they are. We see him at the gym and it's like, man, you know, dude that's like at this point, like wrapping up his elbows because he only does like the 4 to 8 rep range on everything and maxes out with his training partner every week. It's like, if you just did, you know, a more pumpy phase, I guarantee you, you'd feel better. You'd make some progress like over here on this lane. And then when you come back to this thing that you like to do, you're probably going to see some progress. So, and powerlifters do this all the time. Like that's the one thing, like if you look in that area, and I think they kind of have to, or they've been forced to like get there a little bit quicker than I'd say most bodybuilders, because like the metrics are right there. It's like either your total's going up or not. So they've been a little bit more efficient when it comes to that. But no, yeah, excellent point. Changing it up. You still get to work hard. But sometimes, yeah, the answer is also like, yo, take a freaking deload, dude. You've been going hard for 6 months. Yeah.
Well, and you can blend worlds together too. Sometimes it's not about working harder, it's working smarter. Because I love that particular approach too. You know, let's just do a deload, but we're going to kill 2 birds with 1 stone here. We're going to deload, but I want you to take 1 set of everything to like true failure. Just 1 set. That's all I want you to do. And on top of that, I want you to send that 1 set that you do to me, you know, and let's just kind of compare what you've been doing in that 1 set to what you have been doing. You know, sure enough, it always ends up in some way, shape or form, we've kind of proved them wrong. You know, it's like I was doing this load at this many repetitions. I said this was my RPE, but here it is this week. I kind of proved I did three beyond that. You know what I mean? And I will say that sometimes you got to be careful of that, because while you're calling it a deload, it's really not. You've actually got like every one of those repetitions and every one of those sets was truly, truly effective, you know? But that's kind of one of my favorites right now is, okay, let's just kind of audit things a little bit here. Take a couple days off. Next week, quote unquote, deload. But I want you to truly take every set to maybe an RPE 9. I don't want you to stop. I want you to keep every rep super consistent, whether it's strict or a tiny bit of freedom. I want it the same way every single time, every repetition, until it truly does visibly slow down. And a lot of times that right there will just kind of tell us a lot. That'll tell us, I wasn't going as hard as I thought it was. You know what I mean? Or it'll say, well, I was going hard, but boy, I sure wasn't keeping those reps consistent, you know? And in that right there, we've kind of found out we can get away with dropping your volume. You know, we can get away with shaving some things off here and making our training truly effective, you know? So yeah, that's kind of one of my favorites that I've experienced here recently. But like I said, kind of plan a true deload after that, 4 or 5 days off. A true time period where you can let that fatigue mitigate a little bit.
Brad, it's kind of like when you're in prep and you have like that, your big meal of the day or something. And you like, when you're restricted to like one good hearty meal, when you're not eating on the run at work or eating out of your car, I mean, it's like in Home Alone when he puts like lights the candles, makes his mac and cheese, like sits down, like you appreciate that meal so much more because the rest has been taken away from you. Whereas mm-hmm. in the middle of your off season, you could eat 5 meals and not even taste anything in the food, right? So you really do, when you take, like you're saying, take it away and say, look, I need you to focus on, this is your only set. This is your only set. You got to make it the best set you could possibly do. Now mm-hmm. do it and show me it. Same, you know, very similar to that. Like you have to treat every set like it's your last one. Enjoy every meal as if it's as if you're in prep. I love that. And that's the first thing that made me think of. But you really do kind of prioritize and enjoy and focus on it more when a lot of the fluff is taken away.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll be honest with you, I sometimes will start out a block that way. Because especially the way that I kind of arrange my blocks, it's a little bit different. You know, I kind of arrange certain microcycles and I give myself like a month or two, 6 weeks, whatever, to complete that block, you know, and I can auto-regulate days off and, you know, and kind of things like that. But I'll start the first microcycle just taking one set only, one set of everything, and I'll take that to true failure. Keeping reps very consistent. It's amazing how sometimes that 1 week microcycle, that one time frame where I did one set of everything, the true failure, you actually do feel like you accomplished something. Unlike most deloads where it's like, oh man, I felt weak before I even picked up a load, you know, before I even picked up that first dumbbell, I felt weak, you know? So yeah, I have to say, I kind of like to incorporate that kind of into my blocks in a way, you know? So,
man, it's a nice reminder. I need a deload. I do need a deload at this point. that's like literally my answer. But yeah, it's hard sometimes. You're on a roll, and I think you know where to like chop it off. You're like, oh, we got plenty for this block. Let's pack it up and you know get some sleep in, and we'll do better tomorrow. So, I think even when you know better, sometimes it's hard to be objective in the midst of it all. I guess some take home advice, right, for our listeners, something they can apply ASAP. I think those are always fun. Brad gave a few options away, but practical stuff, like things that they can just send to their homies and be like, just fast forward to this part. These are all the answering clips.
Yeah, sometimes that's Brad. I'll admit, I'm getting a little impatient sometimes in my old age.
So what are the secrets? What are the secrets? What are more, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I think the big thing is that while we do profess the progressive overload being the end all answer, right? I think we kind of talked about it. Does it really need to be there? You know, I think that's kind of an important key. I mean, it needs to be there, but does it need to be there near now? You know, does it need to be there here in the next couple of weeks? I think once you get your big building blocks in place, you get that total number of SEPs that you got set for your program that we kind of, you know, recommend in the pyramid books, that 10 to 20. Once you get that set, maybe just run with that for a while, you know, and you might pay attention to a few more things that we talked about. I don't have pain anymore in week three like I did in week one. I no longer feel like I'm being crushed in week four like I did in week two. You know, I'm actually getting this workout done in 55 minutes instead of 65 minutes. I don't think there's anything wrong with just kind of running with things in the short term, you know. But I think we touched on a lot of different things that we can do in the long term, you know. And all of those things are kind of on the table depending on your, you know, your lifting identity, your bodybuilding identity, your strength identity, you know, whatever that is. But I think the big thing is don't be too hasty in making decisions. I think that's kind of the big thing, especially the more you get along in your lifting career. Yeah, maybe when you're a beginner, yeah, maybe you can. You know, maybe you can be a little bit more hasty because ultimately it's just all about getting in the gym and lifting weights. But, you know, I think the thing is how many of our listeners are truly beginners, you know? And so I think that we can't just get away with saying, yeah, just go ahead and just do whatever. But I think at the same time, I say, okay, once you do make a change, ride with it for a little bit, you know? As long as those sets are met, a lot of those are fairly upper RPE. You're pushing close to failure. The frequency is there. I think the progress is going to happen. And then you can just kind of pick and choose your shots as to exactly how and when you're going to make that happen.
I think awesome points. I think what I would like to leave the listeners with is some kind of incomplete list that we've talked about of ways to measure progress. So if any of these things are getting better or getting worse, maybe they should have your attention for a bit. So we've talked about technique, exercise technique. So like I mentioned, is that RDL not quite tapping the ground like it used to? Like, are you kind of putting that on the back burner for load? So we could say exercise technique. We could say outside the gym, right? Like we were talking about before, how are your relationships? How is your relationship with food? How is your relationship with your job, with your family? We could talk about load, right? That's the easy one. Is the load on the bar going up? Alberto, you mentioned the time in the gym. So you're getting more efficient. Maybe you're getting more conditioned. You're getting more efficient with your workout. And then what else did we mention that I'm forgetting?
RPE going down.
RPE, yep. RPE going down. Pain. Yep, pain. So so all of these different things, and this list is incomplete, but just make sure that you, you know, maybe jot this stuff down or record it somewhere and just make a note of how it's going. Is it improving? Is it getting worse? Because that will... If you write it down, if you have your training log, you write down your sets, your reps, your weight, maybe you write your RPE in there, make a note on your technique, I sometimes make an asterisk or something in there. And I know that means, that like I really held the eccentric for a long time. So, you know, give and take a little bit there or what have you, but come up with your own systems to measure all these things so that it's not just this gray area and you need someone to recalibrate you and say, okay, don't forget you're making all this great progress. At the same time, you don't want anything to go down either. So, I would say try to record all these things. And like I said, the list is incomplete, but these are kind of the main ones that we're talking about. So write these things down, track them just like you track everything else. And I think you won't miss out on your progress and you'll see when things need some, perhaps more attention.
You know, I guess don't be in such a rush just because you've committed to progressive training now. Because again, there is the rate at which we wish we could progress, and then there's like the reality of what's appropriate. What are you able gonna? What are you gonna be able to sustain over the long term? I love the suntan comparisons because it's like the answer to getting the tan you want isn't like, I'm just gonna do 30 minutes today because that's gonna get me there faster. It's like, no, bro, you might be slowing down. You're definitely gonna be slowing down the process with 30. So, just be real with yourself. Because even with myself, like with me right now, like I've been training so long, where what can I can't expect now is not the same as say 15 years ago, where some of the dumbest ideas that I came up with in regards to goals, well, they were pretty just far-fetched goals. They were appropriate at the time, but quite ambitious. Like I could nail those because I had so much room to improve. So. I guess be realistic with that timeline. I do think timelines are important. I think it's important to write down, some metrics that you're trying to achieve. So getting explicit with your goals in regards to your progressions out of the many that we've gone over here. Just practical takeaway tools. High rep blocks are, I think, fantastic where, maybe for, a month or so, you just do something that like literally leaves you with a runner's high by the time you're done. Since most people don't do the majority of their work like that, spending a block in, the 15 to 25 rep range, leaves you feeling pretty good when you get out of the gym. It's like, okay, it's almost like whatever pain you get from training or any sports, like, I guess you get the boomerang effect on the other side. So that's kind of nice. That's different. And it gives connective tissue a chance to, catch up a little bit for sure. Since you don't, or my athletes and myself, we don't do them too frequently. It's something for you to kind of get new at. It's like, hey, my leg pressing has been in the 8 to 12 rep range. We're going to keep it 20 to 25 for this block. And it's kind of nice to go in there and be like, knowing that, hey, you're going to add reps. So using those as like little stop points before we get into our next, attack plan has been super valuable. Kind of speaking on just things that I see with, this is, I think, more gender specific. With females, I think sometimes the answer is like, add more load. Like we see it, it's like, don't be afraid. You're that strong. Like you can add more load. Whereas like with guys, it tends to be the other way where it's like, adding reps is the tool too, man. Like it's not like just adding or a slap, especially say on the leg press. It's like you don't have to progress like via 90 pounds each time. Like, right. So, I think those are, those are things that I've been using frequently. Just the high rep phases to kind of, change things up, interrupt things. I think there's something there, and they set us up for progression afterwards because you almost always see that on the other end. Regardless of gender, identify yourself. Are you someone who maybe doesn't use reps as much as you? I know I am. Like, I hate reps, especially like deep into the off season because, you're so strong and you just want to, keep lifting that set of dumbbells as opposed to like that set of dumbbells. If you're a loader, like, hey, give reps a chance. And if you're someone who, lifting heavy makes them a little nervous, it's like, give that a shot. And often that's just something that I see very, very frequently. So, yeah.
And you don't want to be caught like a monkey trying to hump a football.
Like, get your membership revoked.
All those Bradisms. We got to collect all those Bradisms and like put them list.
What is it? The punch bowl. Say it.
The turd to punch bowl. Yes. Yes. Yes.
I would ruin a party.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, right. On a panini maker, but we'll let you tell that story.
We'll save that for another time. We'll save that for a nice dieting episode when we're talking about nutrition, right? So,
question right there.
All right, gents. Great way to end the podcast. Nick, Alberto, thank you for joining me. I appreciate it. It was fun. I even learned a lot. So until next time.
Hey guys, this is Coach Alberto Nunez. Thanks so much for listening to our show today. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. I wanted to take a moment to remind you guys that we have a giant video library of educational materials at 3dmjvault.com. The vault is a place where we have organized our best information, paired it up with some of our favorite resources, and shared with all of you guys in one online database. We have courses on contest prep, hypertrophy, posing, fat loss, postseason recovery, and a whole lot more. Most of it is free. Some of it is for purchase to help support this podcast, and we continue adding pieces of updated content to it every couple of months that members always have unlimited access to. Once again, that's 3dmjvault.com, and we really hope you like it.